Welcome to the MonthEnd CPG Community Chat. The MonthEnd will provide emerging CPG brands real-life knowledge into the accounting, finance, and operational worlds. Our guests will be key stakeholders from those same brands as well as other key contributors to the industry. Welcome to episode 33 of the MonthEnd podcast. Today we have Caleb Wang from Mila. How are you doing today, Caleb?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Brad. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to learning more about Mila, your brand, and then kind of your role there and how you handle kind of some of the finance accounting operations of the business. So let's get started on Mila. What is it? What are you selling? How long you been in business? And then also kind of what's your role and what do you do on a day-to-day standpoint?
Yeah, good question. So Mila is a modern Chinese food company. We actually got started on the D2C side during COVID, where we started shipping our frozen soup dumplings nationwide. And that's been the big driver of the business to date. But this year, very excitingly, we're expanding to retail as well, which is a much bigger market for food specifically. And then kind of the other leg of growth other than channel is just products. So starting with soup dumplings, we launched noodles last year, and there's a lot more products to launch in Chinese food. For my role, I'm the CEO and I cover a lot of the finance and operation pieces, supply chain, as well as kind of the revenue sources.
Awesome. So basically then from a product standpoint, I guess what stands out about your product and what makes it unique and what's your, I guess, proposition to your clients or to your customers?
Yeah, totally. So the Chinese food market, there's just not that much innovation in making authentic, high quality Chinese food. And so that's the gap that we're filling. And we actually got started as a restaurant. And so our kind of ethos was always to make everything in-house, make it high quality, restaurant quality, and compete against like a restaurant experience. So then when we started the D2C side, that was still there. And we're doing things like making everything in-house. We're fully vertically integrated with a big R&D team that makes sure the recipes are authentic and high quality. And then that team communicates with our in-house production team to do all the complex steps needed to make the product high quality as well. And then outside of the product, we're just very customer obsessed on kind of everything that could possibly go wrong in the experience. As you can imagine, like shipping frozen soup dumplings, it can melt, there could be a carry delay, someone could just not bring it out from their porch, they could cook it wrong. So we're doing all the work on the back end to make sure as many people are having a good experience as possible.
So you still have a restaurant open?
Yes, the restaurant. So we have a restaurant open and then the D2C business as well, and then a growing retail business.
And from a retail standpoint, are you talking about like distribution through some of the big natural food providers or direct big retailers, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so to date, we've launched in a couple of retailers in the Pacific Northwest, which is our home base, so Town & Country, Met Market, QFC. We've also launched in Costco and the Bay Area and Pacific Northwest. And then by the end of this year and next year, the logos will keep growing.
Awesome. All right. So let's start on kind of, I think, on the sales side, because this is kind of interesting. So you coming from, I think, the world of finance as well, and looking at a restaurant accounting, what it takes to succeed in that business, to then direct consumer, success from, unit economics, and now moving over to retail. Every one of them, it's got its own little business model within it, the business model. So I guess from your aspect, how do you manage different, like, I guess, or going to manage, which you did retail, like success of the different channels? Like, how would you, like, what KPIs or how do you view that?
Yeah, good question. And I'll just spend time talking about D2C and retail, because that's really the main business. So I think taking a step back, philosophically, it's super important to just understand benchmarking and what average looks like, what best in class look like, and what, from a first principles perspective, unit economics should be, and be hyper-focused on the unit economics and every single driver of unit economics. So for D2C, it's really kind of AOV, product cost, shipping cost to get you to contribution margin before marketing, then your CAC, and then are you making money on the first order? And our philosophy is we should always be making money on the first order. We're not trying to play the LTV payback game of lose money and then hopefully make money over time. It just doesn't create a sustainable business, and you're too reliant on one algo change or just things that are out of your control. So we always make sure we're making money on the first order. And then because our product is high quality, We have high repeat rates, and then the LTV is quite strong as well. So that's like philosophically on the D2C side. But in order to make the math work, especially for frozen food, which has high shipping costs, we hyper obsess on the product so that we can charge a reasonable price and people are willing to pay for it such that the CACs are low. And then we're also vertically integrating. So we're taking a lot of the costs out of the equation and then passing that benefit into back over to the customer. So that's on the D2C side. And then we model it down all the way down to contribution margin. And then we have our fixed overhead, right? And then so historically, our D2C business has to cover the overhead, but increasingly retail can become a contributor to that as well. And retail, you know, it's relatively similar. Product costs are the same, but your revenues are lower because you record net revenues instead of gross. And the difference is you sell it for a cheaper amount to the distributor, who then marks it up to the retailer, who then marks it up to the consumer. So revenues are roughly 50% lower, but you also see a ton of benefits because your shipping costs are lower than D2C, and there's no marketing cost associated. So it's just a different kind of unit economics, but we're hyper focused on every single line item that can make a difference.
Definitely. And I think one of the biggest factors of them, clearly, like outside of the P&L structures basically that you just mentioned, is the cash cycle, right? How are you going to manage like the retail or distribution cash cycle? Because it's much longer. You have AR versus pure D2C where you're getting that money, you know, via credit card deposits.
Yeah, good question. So for us, because we're vertically integrated, we won't see that much of a difference. And I'll explain why. So D2C, we get the money up front. However, we have to produce the product well in advance, and we're holding many weeks of inventory at our fulfillment centers to be able to deliver next day. On the retail side, we're almost producing to PO. And so though we're not getting paid, you know, on the best scenario, 7 days, in the worst scenario, 60 days, that's still 8 weeks of inventory that we were holding on D2C as well. So I don't think it will impact our cash conversion cycle that much net. But inventory, especially as we're growing so quickly, managing inventory and just making sure you're not putting too much cash, or at least you're able to fund it somehow, that is something that we're focused on, and it's a challenge.
So then from a, I was actually going to bring up inventory, so perfect timing here. So you in-house manufacture all your products.
Yep.
I know you started from a restaurant, like you always started in that realm when you went over to the D2C game.
So Jen and I are both from outside the industry. I was in finance, she was in health tech. It never occurred to us that, you know, you can use a co-packer or like we didn't understand. So we're like, oh, we want to make a good product, like let's just do it. And then once we started scaling, we're like, oh, like we can, there's co-packers that exist, let's go reach out to them and see, like, why don't we just use them? Seems great, like way more efficient. And then as we started to talk to them, we realized that at least for Chinese food, the co-packing ecosystem is pretty, is not mature. And so they're just not able to produce to the spec that we want, whether it's like dough thickness or the amount of filling or just the cost structure. And so if our North Star is to produce a really high quality product, we had to do it in-house.
Super cool story there. On that, so from an inventory kind of planning standpoint or manufacturing, right? Like initially you had to buy equipment to handle all this. Again, from what you're saying is from this conversation for the first 10 minutes, I'm getting it like, hey, we're going to build up and get to where, like, to support the actual sales that we're doing. So how did you finance that? How did you plan that initially? And now kind of how are you, you know, the growth or the scale of your manufacturing facility, like how have you handled all that?
Yeah. So there's a couple of, I would say, phases. The first thing is because we're first order profitable, that helps, right? So we're not, you know, that definitely is a key component. And then, however, now we're at a stage where we basically just have this massive Google Sheets. I think internally we call it like the beast, where it pulls in all the demand from every single channel. We run, because like D2C, it's like, how much marketing spend did you have every single day or every single week over the last, you know, years, what's the SKU distribution? And then we plan out over the next 6 months, and you have to factor in seasonality, and then you have to, because we have our fulfillment centers as well, you have to split up to 5 or 6 different fulfillment centers. So that all kind of lives somewhere. And so the demand side comes in for D2C, the demand side comes in for retail, which all has different SKU counts and permutations. And then that first feeds into a production plan. of like, what are we actually going to produce? Then there's this whole other like calculus that goes into, okay, here's a production plan. What do we need to buy at what time? But we don't want to buy too much because you don't want to hold that much inventory. So that's another piece of analysis. Another piece of analysis is once you produce it, where do you ship it? And then that's something that we just do on a weekly basis for super tactical stuff. And then monthly analysis in case demand changes or we get another retailer or velocities are higher than we expected. So that's kind of our process that we kind of go through.
Sounds like a great process. And I'm envisioning this Google Sheets. I think I understand why it's called the Beast after you just explained that.
It was in Excel and then it broke. So
yeah,
moving. I think we're moving to Google Sheets. It's probably still in Excel. Yeah.
Do you envision where you want to move? You're going to move to like maybe like more like a NetSuite or something at some point in the future? Are you thinking about that? Or like, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So we're moving to Fulfill as our ERP. And it's like halfway done, and that will get at least the historicals in place. Cause like right now there's still a lot of like separate Google Sheets to at least like get the answer of like what inventory is and things like that. However, I would imagine still a lot of the calculations still happens and like the logic happens in something flexible, like a Google Sheet or Excel.
Definitely. What are the kind of key metrics that you guys are using and just pure like SKU success, you know, whether it's sales, profitability, how do you look at it? Like when you launch a product, is it successful or not?
Yeah. I think the metrics are different. So like from a philosophical perspective on D2C, you can test and learn much more quickly than a retail. So we want to launch more broad SKUs on D2C and just see if it sells, right? Just the velocity is the most important thing. And see if we can get it first order profitable by running ads. And if that happens, then we are like, okay, like this is something that should work, that resonates with folks. Over the long term, we look at retention as well to see what people are asking for and what the repeat buys look like. So those are the metrics for success on D2C. And then retail, we kind of pick the best SKUs that we have on D2C. And then we're like, okay, these are the ones that have broad appeal. We will kind of sell through in the, you know, the Targets of the world, the Costco's of the world. And there it's really velocity. So like comparing how many units per week we're selling versus everything else in the frozen aisle, not just Chinese food, because we're competing against the entire freezer. And that helps, we're trying to drive value to our, you know, retail partners and buyers and driving incremental sales. And we want to show that our products are generating, you know, revenue and gross margin dollars for them.
Very cool. As a fellow business owner who is in business with my wife, as you are, like, how has that been? Like, what are the failures, the successes, just from a pure personal relationship, business relationship? Yep. What's worked well? What's not worked well on your guys' end?
Yeah, very luckily, and we didn't plan for this, it has worked out very well. And I think the reason it's worked out well is because we have very complementary backgrounds and skill sets. So I can do all the stuff that we just talked through, finance, operations. She's really strong at product marketing, high level company strategy. And she's also worked at a high growth startup in the past, whereas I've only worked at really small kind of boring finance companies. So she can help scale the business a lot more. And then also she has a really good North Star of like what our customer value prop should be. And she like is the one who holds the company to really high standards. Really, really good kind of mix of skill sets, which has allowed us to scale faster because you don't need to find other senior leaders to fit those roles. On the negative side, it's just like you're working 24/7 and like, where do you draw the boundaries? And my definition of quality time is we're talking about like business strategy. And she's like, nope, that's not quality time. Like we have to like have phones off during dinner. So like getting, we reach alignment there, but like there's growing pains, especially with a kid as well. So just the balance, it was a point of friction at some point.
Yeah. No, similar to us. It's like, you know, we complement different departments, different, you know, stay away from each other, let them do, you know, each other's things, and then try to create some personal boundaries, at home with the kids and just from a relationship standpoint. So, a couple of like final questions. Number one, like, is there a big kind of regret or a big mistake that you guys made that you really learned from in the operational, like finance, cash standpoint that then you'll always remember as you guys go forward?
Yeah, definitely a couple. I think the first thing is just underestimating the infrastructure and the resources needed to like run the ship well. And so before we had the mini beast, we had nothing. So like then all of a sudden, I remember a point last year where I was like, hey, our inventory is like way too high for what our planning was. And I had thought that I had communicated to everyone at the company and everyone's on the same page. And like, as you grow, you just realize that you need explicit, like a tool or a source of truth or some like cadence or some process where it's not just scrambling every single day looking at ad hoc analyses. So like that's what helped us create this internal tool. So that's one interesting learning. And then the second interesting learning is on the finance side. It just takes a lot more work and systems and people and process to get data to a point where you can concretely make decisions. I kind of came from the finance background. So I didn't really fully appreciate accounting or process and how to resource that appropriately. And so we're now staffing up the team a lot more than we have in the past to get the data in a place where we would like it.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So the final two questions, we always end every kind of episode with this. And you know, the listeners out there are kind of emerging CPG brands. So taking these learnings that you know you were talking about here. But I guess so for the listeners out there, what does one CPG industry do for a emerging CPG brand founder?
I think do try to figure out where you're adding value to the customer. Because ultimately that's your moat and ultimately that's how you scale. So if you have to try to be differentiated in some way that's meaningful where people like even 2 to 3 years from now, it will still be differentiated. And so for us, it's no one's really focused on authentic Chinese food. And we've also built the moat of vertical integration. So in order for someone to do soup dumplings, it would just take a lot of investment internally and a lot of complexity. So doesn't mean it's going to be a moat forever, but that buys us some time. Kind of picking a different flavor for, you know, a chip like may not do as well because it's easier for you to get into the market, but it's also easier for other folks to copy. And so that's, you have to know exactly what the bet is. So if that's the bet, then you still have to have a plan of how you're building that mode of it over time.
Gotcha. And then on the opposite side of that, what is one don't?
Don't price your product with low gross margins. So I guess the opposite is try to make money on every order to be sustainable.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing that I try to, and I think the industry, especially the last kind of 9 to 12 months with what's happened economically, really it's getting back to business basics, right? Profitability, cash flow, like, you know, expense management versus just pure, you know, grow top line, raise money. The shift has changed. So I think getting more into that aspect now is getting better into the practice of the small business owner versus just grow top line and we'll raise money and grow top line and raise money. It's like, no, profitability at some point, that's what people are going to look at, free cash flow. So awesome. Well, Caleb, this was great. Congrats on all the success of Mila to date. And I guess while we're wrapping up, where can people get Mila? What's new? What should they be looking at when they go to your website, or where should they buy your product?
Yeah, you can go to our website, eatmila.com. And then increasingly, you'll probably start to see us popping up in retail locations, probably towards the end of this year nationwide, and then in larger scale next year.
Awesome. All right. Caleb Wang from Mila. Really enjoyed the chat. Episode 33 of the Month End Podcast. This was awesome. Take care. Cool.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Brett.